Insonorisé, le podcast.
I'm Miyuki Okiranta, and you're listening to the Soundproof Podcast. As part of the 2015 Tasmanian International Arts Festival, five farming sheds in northwest Tasmania are preparing to be transformed into performance venues for experimental and new music compositions. Acoustic Life of Sheds is a radio adaptation of this live event. The project brings together farmers and artists to explore the stories of these often overlooked sheds and how these families are creatively responding to the changes in their farming lifestyle. The sheds themselves contain long histories as workers' huts, shearing sheds, stables and dairies. And through the eyes and ears of artists, their idiosyncratic personalities come to light through music. Sound designer and composer Stuart Thorne spent the past year travelling to Tasmania for the arts and social change company Big Heart and capturing Acoustic Life of Sheds.
This is just a resonating chamber. This stuff is collided with sheds. Done the champagne glass, you know, where you get the wine glass and you do
and go around. No, yeah, I've seen it, but never done it.
Okay. A440, is
that
all?
There we go.
443. There you go. Did you hear that?
Yeah. We're celebrating it.
It's like a violin string, right? And the wind is the violin. Wind's going over the string like that to make it.
Oh.
Yeah. She's missing it.
Jen!
There was this dead whale on the beach. After about 2 years, it pretty well decomposed, and we brought back the huge jawbones of this sperm whale and the vertebrae, and we displayed them outside. If you can imagine these two huge jawbones sticking up.
It's been there for decades, on the outskirts of Wynyard in northwest Tasmania. Like it's kind of the ultimate shed that as a kid you might want to creep into, you know, because there's this suggestion as you look through the window of something inside.
Have a look what's in this little hidden treasure. Each room has a story. The purpose of this building originally was a museum.
It was originally an amateur museum by a local man, basically a collector. He was obsessed with collecting and used this place as a way to display what he'd collected.
My father was Bruce Walker. After the war, bought property out here and farmed that. Very creative in his own way.
He'd go in And there are remnants of displays, handwritten labels.
Yes, it talks about the replica of Windsor Castle, constructed from Tasmanian seashells.
Letters from World War One.
A document that was airdropped to some of the Japanese troops in New Guinea, saying, look, you should be surrendering now because, you know, you've lost the war.
But also there's this suggestion of what was there that's now gone.
A big tiger shark head. Huge. Oh, Bill Dart, fisherman from Wynyard, caught it out off Table Cape, you see, and my father cut the head off, and he had a big glass tank, and he put it in that with formalin, and it sat in here for years, as did other jars, or might add, of other strange
creatures. Baby birds in jars, snakes in jars, shark jaws, giant crabs, Egyptian, like an Egyptian kind of mummy casket, what is it called?
Extensive stamp collection, coins, butter churns in it, and milk cans, and old saws.
When you go into a shed like that and you're making an artwork rather than an historical documentation of the place, it can be quite overwhelming to know how to make a singular overall experience for your audience, because you can very quickly get caught up into wanting to show them all the history. But I think that's a bit of a trap. So for me, the real heaven send of this was the sense of the mystery of the guy himself, his motivations and his desire to create this place. His spirit kind of has seeped into the walls, you know, like the place is almost a reconstruction of his own mind. I'm thinking of them like children sneaking into a place, and what they hear when they get in there is rewarding their curiosity.
Sounds like a plane heading to Wynyardow. They often dip their wing to take a look at the chooks as they go over. I think the pilots really enjoy this time of year.
My name is Paul Roberts Thompson. I'm a third generation caretaker of custodian of this family property. It's an extinct volcanic plug sticking out in the sea 500 feet high.
If you think of storybook volcanoes, bubbling lava in the middle, when that cools and solidifies, you've got the cone on the outside. Essentially, that's eroded away over the last 13 million years, and you're left with just the solid rock in the centre.
And you view it from the air, and it's like this table up above the sea.
They see a picture from the air of Table Cape, and they're standing on it, and they're like, am I here? You know, like, it's big enough that you don't know that you're on this
flat plateau rising up out of the ocean. Then the clouds rolling in from the sea.
And this is where we farm. Very fertile red soils, some of the few fertile soils in Australia.
What struck me was how green it was there and how black the soil is.
There's soil just as good, but there's not much better. My father and uncle were very good farmers.
My grandfather and his brother, they ran this property and several others together. They would never, ever drive in a car together. That was how conscious they were about succession on the farm. So they take it pretty seriously.
Now, on this farm, it's my turn to carry it on and try and hold it all together. So we grow about eight hectares each of tulips and Dutch iris and liliums. This shearing shed is sort of a relic of the past. The tulip business, in a way, was born out of the philosophy that founded this shed.
1, 2, 3, 4.
When Lucky came here, he did a bit of improvising.
I just sat there with my Dobro and picked a little, and it's, you know, sat on haystacks.
The way that he played, it sort of had a reverence in a way that fits with the shed.
Lucky went in and he fooled around, and I kind of like just started staring at the shed. I like to look at lights a lot. Watching the light come through the windows, the way it came through the floorboards, because in a shearing shed you've got the gaps in the floorboards, where it came through the walls.
I understand that this, although it's a working shed, it's still quite a beautiful building.
On one of the benches, there's some shears. The person who put those shears down the very last time never knew that was the last time he was ever going to put those shears down in that one place. The nostalgia of that moment, that man, you imagine him, you know, at the end of the day, putting those shears down, washing his hands or whatever, and walking out that door. There they are still, you know, they're covered with cobwebs and dust and dirt, and no one's gone back. People's lives have all moved on to another place. I didn't know what it was going to be till I got in the shed and I thought about this whole idea of abandoned objects and the way people's lives change.
I mean, this is the prototypical disaster wool shed. You know, this is the one that's going to ruin the Australian wool industry, because you're going to get sort of bicycle tyres and you know, drench bottles and things in bales of wool going off to China and sort of ruining, you know, $500,000 worth of machinery on Saturday afternoon. You know, when the boss wasn't looking properly and someone didn't service the detection machinery.
Born on the corners of Howard Street, out there where we came out. The roof looked good off those old sheds. Ah, see that wall there? That's the house. When I took the boards off the house, I kept the best of the boards and put them in the centre of the shed. Good afternoon.
We have Jack Archer's collection of sheds.
Apparently he's turning 94 next Monday. He's a legend in the area for training sheepdogs.
Border collies. Oh, I had anything up to sometimes 12 or 14. I'd have some pups, young dogs, not quite there. And four or five that were there. You go out on the arenas. You had four obstacles to go through, and you had a judge out there taking points off you one dog, three sheep. That's what you started with, but you might end up with none.
Jack talks about moving sheep from farmland to farmland around here with his sheep dogs.
The people moving dogs and sheep through space. I'm at the centre of a sound horizon that expands and has a finite state.
Can we have a look in the door?
Yeah.
The old stable door. The old stable door is cut in half here anyway. Yeah, those pegs. They used to hang the harness on them of the night. That's another thing you told us was had been a stable.
A lot of his tools are still in there.
Oh, look here.
Which he discovered.
The old vice.
He was like, oh, that's my old vice.
And Stu, I think you asked Jack, is this your vice, Jack?
Is that yours?
And Jack paused and hesitated. Is this my vice? Is this my vice anymore? It was my vice. Now it's Lisa's vice. Like, you could hear all that going on in his head in the pause.
No, it used to be.
It is. It's yours. It's still yours, Jack.
Now I've got nowhere to put it, but it's handy there.
And you can just hear in that the passing on and the stewardship and the caring for an object and what remains in that object.
About 15 photos of when she came around the corner, because she came around in the corner in a
little
four-wheel,
thing.
Six-wheel, is it? Called a gator. Mm. And it was so, so from the land.
Nellie was snapping away. I was a bit worried about that camera.
People on the land have a sense of, have a, this bravery about them. They are taking on that red soil.
Jane, I am.
Hi, Nick.
Nick. Hi Nick.
And Nellie.
Hello, Nellie.
Every space that I perform in is a part of the performance. In this shed, I'm imagining there'll be quite a bit of reverb. I'm hoping that some of the items on the wall will rattle a little bit and make sounds and be a part of it as well.
Okay, well, this is the shed I had in mind.
Oh, there.
We call it the boat shed, and it doesn't really accommodate a boat, but other vehicles.
The shed opens up into this gully where there's a creek running down. There's also a spill-off of water from all the dams in the area.
My husband was in the diamond drilling industry, and the shed's made of old drill rods that have gone a bit rusty.
Used diamond drilling rods, yeah, from her husband's business. They were extremely tall. They were very long.
It was made tall just because I don't think my husband could be bothered cutting the drill rods down to a smaller size. It was just easier this way.
I've been looking at that dirt and wanting to use that colour strongly in my composition. Oh, it's
red.
Red, but it's not, it's like...
But rust?
Yeah, like rust red or, this is going to sound macabre, but dried blood red. So there's this kind of life attached to that red, plus the incredible rich connection to its farming potential. I thought, I'm just going to get a jar and to actually take the dirt home, but, you know, who carries a jar with them?
Would you mind terribly if I borrowed that glass jar and brought it back next time?
You can.
I just want to put some dirt.
Roof racks hanging up there. Some fan belts. We've got the pump, pumps waters from the dam. Fuel drums. And this drum is a shark line. Look at these monster hooks. We've got bits of timber left over from building, macrocarpa, and there's a tray pot down there. Two surfboards and a kite or two. An explosives box, but it hasn't any explosives in it. He's blown up a few trees. The trees was this big old gum tree, more than one, was kindling at the end of it.
Beautiful rings. I noticed that because I talk with my hands and she talked with her hands, very elegant hands and very beautiful rings.
This is my mother's engagement ring, a little rose diamond. This is an opal we bought on our travels, and this is, I call it my good conduct ring. When we were married in 1971, we didn't have any money, we lived in a caravan. About 10 years after we were married, he bought this lovely ring. So I call it my good conduct ring. I can't say it was an engagement ring, because it came much later. But he must have thought I deserved it. It's a lovely sapphire with a diamond either side, and I keep it on all the time, all the time. And if I'm working on the farm, I'll just make sure I have gloves over the top. I think it's safer there than anywhere else.
I'm Karen Thompson and I'm married to Don.
Don Thompson. I'm one of the owners of Black Ridge Farm.
And we're at Millabina on the northwest coast of Tasmania. We're on a 217-acre property.
Out the kitchen window, we're looking south in the very distance on a really clear day. We can see the summit of the Cradle Mountain. To the northeast, we can see Bass Strait. And if we drive to our west a little bit, we're basically right on the edge of the Tarkine Wilderness.
Beautiful undulating hills. It's incredibly green because of the rainfall, and it just really feels like a little corner of paradise.
A good population of wedge-tailed eagles. The sea eagles come up, particularly at lambing time. We've got quolls and devils with a giant freshwater lobster, and we've got platypus.
Gorgeous, lush pastures with animals clearly having a fantastic life.
black-faced Suffolk and Romney Marsh ewes. Around about 500 lambs should be produced this year. We have some boar goats, which we mainly got into to control the weeds.
What's really nice about the Wessex Saddleback, I think, is that it's just so friendly. Large pig, basically black, floppy ears, has a white saddle over its shoulder.
Pigs just literally rolling around in mud, having a great time.
Our children have actually delivered piglets. So she said, oh, I just cleared the airways, Mum, as each one came out, I cleared their airways and made sure they didn't get squashed. These are just really beautiful, placid. Pigs.
They're very affable. They seem like really friendly creatures.
It started with Missy Piggins, a couple of the boars we had, Johnny Farm, Ham, and James Grunt.
Don actually went to check on the sows and he came in to me and he said, Amy Winehouse has died. And I said, what? No, oh no. And because she's one of my favourite sows. And he said, no, Amy Winehouse, not Amy Swinehouse. And I said, oh, and 3 months later, Amy Swinehouse had actually died of a cheese overdose.
She unfortunately died of a cheese overdose.
She was actually a sow with attitude. If she could have been in a rock and roll band, she would have been.
Ask them whether they wouldn't mind just making some recordings around the farm.
And it goes like this. Windermere Avena, we are glad we've seen you. We love the farm and in the barn where we can't hear you.
So the kids have been busily going around and getting all sorts of noises happening. And then John said, oh, we might not like to hear all the noises on the farm because apparently I swear a little bit.
We want her to see the land that's born. We wanted to see it before it shone. The goats have kids that run around. The pigs like to dig up the ground.
When was that one born?
Oh, Winnie! Last night. Winnie! Winnie chases guinea fowl. The mum and dad has to grow.
You driving?
Yep. The chooks are good at laying and we all love playing.
Red-tailed eagle just went past and the plovers are upset.
I spent a couple of days listening to all those recordings, which was fantastic. It was like getting really connected to the sounds of the place and the people who I haven't spent that much time with, but listening to those recordings, I learnt so much about them. These really beautiful relationships between different members of the family that just kind of get revealed if someone's got a recording device in their pocket.
Another rainy day.
Win-win, go away, we have so much to do today.
Getting heavier.
When Genevieve came up here, she just went around all the sheds to see where she'd like to compose some music, and we spent quite a lot of time up in the shearing shed. A lot of the stuff that's in there is actually was my grandfather's, so that kind of helps me to cope with not having my grandfather around anymore.
She pointed out her grandfather's wall table and the wall press and was just telling me about her family, and those objects obviously meant so much to her because that was her history, that was her people, and the fact that she was still carrying on that work. And there was something about the way that she spoke about how important those objects were because they sort of held memory and they held the spirit of people who aren't around anymore, who she clearly loves deeply and still are very much part of her life. And I loved that. So it was like, oh, we'll play here. I guess the thing about the shed that we were really struck with, so it's tin and it's big, and so it's really resonant. It actually sounds great. And Jim's planted these things called exciters all around the tin walls, which are picking up our sound and resonating it and making the shed itself resonate. Phil's a trumpeter. He's an improviser. He comes out of the jazz world primarily, but he's also extremely well-versed in the classical world. He's genuinely curious, and so he knows a huge amount about all sorts of quirky characters in the world generally, and particularly in the musical world. Incredibly thoughtful man. Very philosophical person, I think, and very philosophical musician.
But you know, on that piano you can take the panelling off and get into the strings and pluck the strings and stick bits of paper into the strings.
I really want to like open it up and the sound come out.
There's a really famous composer, John Cage, who worked out a way to turn the piano into a percussion orchestra by putting screws and rubbers and elastic bands and paper clips on all the strings. It really changes the sound, turns it into a percussion. Percussion ensemble, it's incredible. You'd probably YouTube John Cage.
The first thing you do when you're learning harp is just learn to play with the second finger.
This is awesome.
Well, Marshall's a harpist, a concert harpist, an absolutely brilliant player. Marshall has a complete passion for contemporary music. He works a lot with early music historical instruments, so he has a whole series of harps. He has little harps that come from different times and places. He's very comfortable in extremely different musical worlds. And an absolutely exquisite player. I can't quite get over the sound that he makes. Whenever we're supposedly playing together, I find myself playing very little because I just want to listen. It's funny, people think, you know, we're musicians who do this all the time, but there's something about a very beautiful physical environment, nothing to do with a concert hall or a recording studio, being able to be right in the music and in one another's company. A small room of people listening intently that's even more precious, I think.
Acoustic Life of Sheds by Stuart Thorne is the radio adaptation of a performance taking place over two weekends during the Tasmanian International Arts Festival. The entire 4.5-hour concert travels across 5 sheds, and it's free. And if you head along, you'll hear the likes of Genevieve Lacey, Lucky Oceans, Nick Haywood, Marshall McGuire, Phil Slater, Damien Barbler, Madeline Flynn and Tim Humphrey. Check out the Soundproof website for more details.